everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where politics and sports intersect, and we break it all down for you. Today, I'm welcomed here with my guest, Bill Ross. Do you go by Bill or William?
Bill is great.
I mean, that's what I've been calling you. This is formality for the
audience. Well, I've been called worse, but Bill's great. I've been called other names, too, but I'll go with Bill.
So, Bill, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself here first before we get going?
Well, actually, you know, I love sports. I'm a coach. I'm an athlete, ex-football player. That really is the way I sort of see my life. Football player first, coach, and then everything else, father, you know, husband, the whole deal. But so I have a passion for that, and I look forward to sharing and talking and, you know, expressing my feelings on different topics, to the point, not with any vanilla, but actually how I see them. And, I think that everybody likes a different take, so to speak.
There you go. There you go. And today, Bill is going to give us his takes on Dikembe Mutombo, Matt Sluka's NIL dreams, the police blotter. Who's in the police blotter again? And sports betting or sports bettors are angry. And the poor new generation gets too triggered. Oh, my feelings are hurt. We're going to talk about that. But being angry is wrong. Yeah. So, I mean, what I mean is being angry and taking it out on people via social media is wrong. So, Bill, are you ready to get into it?
I'm ready to go.
All right. So, first of all, let's look at Dikembe Mutombo. He was a towering legacy of compassion and elegance. So, Mr. Mutombo was born in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And if you're not aware of Africa and its political, that's a bad place. Think Harlem or Compton in a country size. You know, sadly, he died at the age of 58 from brain cancer, and he began treatment for a brain tumor in 2022. So, some of his career highlights, Bill, 18 years in the NBA, 6 teams, the Denver Nuggets, Atlanta Hawks, Philadelphia 76ers, New Jersey Nets, New York Knicks, and Houston Rockets. He won the NBA Defensive Player of the Year 4 times, selected the 8 All-Star teams and 3 All-NBA teams, ranked 2nd in NBA history with 3,289 blocks. He became a star at Georgetown before his NBA career, and sadly, he never won an NBA championship. What do you think of these highlights? I mean, this to me, this guy was a dominant force, defensively speaking. What are your thoughts?
Well, I would obviously agree with that. I mean, I when I hear his name or think about him, I think of him as he's a citizen of the world for me that happened to be an amazing basketball player. And he continued that work even after his career was over. But so he, to me, is what every athlete should be or should try to attempt to be, at least, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, as an athlete, but being a citizen on and off the court. And then what you can do with all of the things that you've achieved and give back. And he encompasses, you know, all of that.
You know, that's a very good point.
It's
a very good point because, you know, Bill, as good looking and as young as he appears, is closer to my age. And we grew up, and Bill, feel free to the chime in if you disagree, but we grew up in an era where there are responsibilities with your job and how you represent the organization. And Dikembe Mutombo is from that generation, that era where you carried yourself with dignity, with the belief that you are a role model and kids will look up to you. So Bill is absolutely right. You know, he was a player for the world. I mean, his humanitarian work. He created the Dikembe Mutombo Foundation in 1997, donated $15 million to open a hospital in the Congo, Kinshasa. And again, look, right now, I'm all for green energy, but I get in arguments with the greenies because a lot of our cobalt comes from the Republic of Congo, and they use child labor, you know, not to mention the Diamond Wars, the child labor. I mean, so having an actual hospital there for the poor, because most of those governments are corrupt, was a thing. 15 million was a big thing. He was named, and again, for what Bill was alluding to, he was named the NBA's first global ambassador in 2009. He invested in NBA Africa and helped develop the Basketball Africa League. Bill, his humanitarian work, I mean, a lot of players, they do this. They have their charities, and I know this firsthand. They do have charities set up, and I know this firsthand as well. They're not involved in their charities except when their agent, there's an event coming up and they have to make an appearance. You know, he was actually involved in the day to day versus retiring and hitting the golf course as many athletes do. Your thoughts on his humanitarian work?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you have to respect the guy because, you know, for more than one reason, but, you know, he actually will put the shovel in his hands, you know, do the initial, you know, the dirt with the ribbon, but then he'll keep working on it and stays attached to it, right? It's not where he's moving on to the next piece, or the next concept, whatever they're doing or next idea, but he actually sticks with the project and gets his hands, you know, not dirty, but gets involved and stays with it. It's not an appointment. It's not a, you know, it's not something that he's doing just as an appearance for a fee or whatnot. He actually does it for the right reasons. And so many people don't do that, or if they do it, it's not for the right reasons. But he actually did all of it for the right reasons. And I think that's something that everybody should know about him, you know, today, tomorrow, and in the future. And if people would model themselves after him as an athlete, giving back to their communities, whether it's where they grew up or the state they're from or the country they're from, we'd all be better for it. And I think that's part of what we all should be trying to do for each other anyway.
You would think, and say that half sarcastically, but with what I call an ugly truth, because that's how most these athletes should, because they have a lot of young kids looking up to them, and they don't. You know, so he was known for his signature wag after blocking shots. Did you ever watch him play?
Yes, I did, yeah.
You know, so, and he's, again, he's remembered for his humanitarian efforts. Some of the tributes, you know, Joel Embiid referred to him as a role model. LeBron James highlighted Mutombo's iconic moments in playoff history. You know, he just seemed like a really great guy. And I think part of your legacy is when the younger generation goes, oh, yeah, I looked up to that guy. Your thoughts on his legacy and the finger wag?
Well, I was a UConn fan, so, you know, he was playing for Georgetown, so I didn't always like the finger wag or whatever, but, you know, it was against my team. But, you know, he had a personality before, you know, Jordan obviously took over the court and he had his thing, but I feel like he had a personality before, you know, every individual athlete had something they did and celebrated something. It was simple. It was direct and you got the point real quick and he moved on and kept doing his business and it wasn't overdone, but it was real. And, he was a pleasure to watch both on both sides of the court.
And to Mr. Dikembe Mutombo from Bill and I and the rest of the world, rest in peace and safe journeys as you have begun your next adventure, whatever that is. We'll all be there one day. And I know with everything you've done, Dikembe, you're riding high right now, I bet. Any final words, Bill, before we move on?
No, I just I'm glad that I was able to see him in person and watch him play and enjoyed every moment that I had when I was doing that. He was a great athlete.
Exactly. All right. Let's get to the main event. Sorry, Dikembe. Got to let you go. Luka's NIL drama. Matt Sluka announced he's taking a redshirt season after just three games in the 2024 season. That was a couple weeks ago. You know, so Bill and I, we had to put off this story. But it's not about Sluka. It's about the landscape that's changed in NIL. So it's a very complex situation. Lucas agent Marcus Cromartie, he claimed that UNLV did not fulfill a verbal offer of $100,000 made by an assistant coach. UNLV's collective did pay Sluka a $3,000 fee for his summer engagement, and the school formally offered him $3,000 per month for 4 months, which was $88,000 less than the alleged verbal agreement. Talk about short change, you know. Bill, what are your brief thoughts before we get into the details of this?
Well, just the opening remarks, they're very confusing. The situation, there's so much more to this situation than is on paper, I believe. I don't personally like the way the portal and the NIL is set up, so we'll get into that, you know, down the road. But this documents a really big problem we have in college sports now. And this is just one quarterback from Holy Cross at UNLV. Does he see a different angle? Does he see a better opportunity? You know, is he not happy all of a sudden where he is? Is he looking for more money? Is his agent telling him to do something? You know, is it dad? Does he want to do something different? And there's so many different angles and ways this can be broken down. And that's part of the problem with the whole NIL and portal as we know it. So it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out.
So UNLV claims that Sluka's agent made financial demands that they interpreted as violating NCAA rules against pay for play. So obviously the money was not there. He was $88,000 shy. So he redshirted, right, and he announced it on Twitter. And I think the audience may not be able to read this too well. So it states, I have decided to utilize my redshirt year and will not be playing in any additional games this season. I committed to UNLV based on certain representations that were made to me, which were not upheld after I enrolled. Despite discussions, it became clear that these commitments would not be fulfilled in the future. I wish my teammates the best of luck this season and hope for the continued success of the program. So, the school said, whoa, this is a violation of NCAA rules. And his former head coach, Bob Chesney, his former coach at Holy Cross, stated, Sluka's decision was not motivated by money. He revealed that Sluka had previously turned down opportunities to leave Holy Cross for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Chesney mentioned that major college football coaches had reached out to him about Sluka after losing their starters to transfer portal. Okay, I hear this.
Yeah.
I read what he said, Bill, and it sounds to me like money is the reason.
Yeah.
Who's right, and why UNLV if major college coaches reached out?
Well, exactly. So there's two things. The way I look at that is, one, I think everything's always about money, somewhere, shape, or form, right? His coach at Holy Cross is not going to throw him under the table and say, you know, he's looking for more money or, you know, what it might be, that, because he just had a beautiful career there. He is helping them end up at UNLV. And if there were other schools that were offering more, as you said, why did he end up at UNLV? I mean, it's not the first place people think of when you think about football. They think about basketball and other things that might occur in Vegas. But needless to say, it sounds very odd to me. And when you have schools, they have the NIL programs inside the university to prevent this kind of thing from happening, where an assistant coach can mention something and, you know, oh, we'll do this for you. It's set up. There's more structure to it than this. So it sounds like, you know, he might have thought he was getting something and he wants more dollars. It's always about the money, unfortunately.
Oh, I agree. And look, UNLV has started the season 3-0 before Sluka's decision, and they were rolling. 27-7 victory week one, 72-14 week two, 23-20 week three, and then he quit. You know, yeah. Now they were considered a potential contender for college football playoffs in this new 12-team format. Right. They had beaten two Big 12 teams. Am I looking at the right year? The UNLV Rebels, Houston. They just beat Fresno State. Yes. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking at my notes. They defeated Fresno State 59-14, improving to 4-0. And they entered the top 25 rankings at number 25. Okay, I'm sorry. I confused myself. My apologies, Bill, and to the audience. So they did not miss a beat with Sluka out. So the new quarterback, Haj Malik Williams, performed well, 13-60 passes, 182 yards and 3 touchdowns. He rushed for 119 yards and a touchdown. It shows an offense that tends to use the athleticism of their quarterback. Now, the setback, they lost to Syracuse, 44-41. Now, the offense is still rolling at 41 points. To me, it sounds like that defense collapsed. But the reason I brought this up is that offense is still rolling without him. Yeah. But I don't want to diminish Sluka here. So before I get your thoughts, Bill, 4 seasons at Holy Cross, he amassed 5,900 yards passing, 3,400 yards rushing. So he's a dual threat, totally 97 touchdowns. Him being a dual threat aligns with Haj Malik Williams and his ability to be a dual threat. So it looks like they targeted those dual threat quarterbacks. I could be wrong. I haven't watched him play. I'm just looking at the numbers. He set an NCAA Division I single game record for rushing yards by a quarterback with 330 yards. Kind of one reason why I said he's dual threat. A 2-time finalist for the Walter Payton Award, named Patriot League Offensive Player of the Year 2023. His legacy: he ranked 3rd in career rushing yards at Holy Cross, 2nd in rushing touchdowns. In essence, Matt Sluka was a standout player at Holy Cross. He showcased exceptional talent and made significant contributions to the program. So to me, my question to you was originally going to be, what does UNLV do in the short term? Look for another quarterback or stick with what they have? What are your thoughts on this quarterback that they're replacing Sluka with? Me, they have not missed a beat offensively. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with that. He actually played very well against us, against Syracuse, and looked fine. I don't think they're missing a beat with him. The offense, he's a very good athlete. He runs really well. He seems to make good decisions. I haven't watched a lot of tape on him, but he seems to have good control of the game. And makes good decisions, didn't turn the ball over that much, ran the ball really well and effectively, and put the ball where it needed to be and threw the ball well. So I don't think that's an issue at all. I will point out that McCord for Syracuse has effectively used the portal and the NIL to find a great spot for himself from Ohio State, because he's having a fantastic year. But as far as UNLV goes and Williams, I think they just move along now. They had to kick a field goal in OT and couldn't stop Syracuse out of the end zone. So that's how they lost, in overtime. So,
well, you know, maybe so. And I agree with your assessment. So my maybe so is in contradiction to what you said. But they had just hit the top 25. And, that loss is a massive setback in terms of the bigger picture goes. So to me, that top 25 was not necessarily a must win this early in the season. They can still, come back. But that's a brutal loss to their program in attracting new talent from the portal or recruiting. To be in the top 25, to me, seems that's a big recruiting tool, don't you think?
Well, no, it is a big recruiting tool. The problem is when you get these schools that have not been in the top 25 that much or aren't consistently in the top 25 and they break in because they're 4-0, let's say, Syracuse is still undefeated, but so they're 4-0 rolling, but who have they played? And they had a couple early matchups in the, big conference games or out of conference games, but so they haven't been in it and now they're in it. Now you have to get together your teammates, the coaching staff has to calm the team down and settle in and keep doing what you're doing and focus on practice, focus on execution and whatnot and pregame and not look at the papers and look at the rankings and read all the articles, because a lot of times what happens is that next week those teams lose.
Yes.
And that's what
happens. I agree.
But they did play very well, but they ended up bottling out.
I got to be honest. This portal, we're going to get into it in a few minutes, but this portal is a mess right now. But eventually, it's going to hurt the big powers, because that guy who's been sitting behind that 3-year starter is going to transfer. So you're going to start seeing not necessarily new powers arise, but you're not going to see the old powers dominant as they have because of how messed up the system was in the first place. So there have been conflicting reports about Sluka's motivations. Sources suggest that he's been approached with more lucrative offers from other teams. And to me, that's a reality. You know, 3,000, 20-some-odd thousand there. I mean, I did research on Caitlin Clark for another previous podcast, and over her 3 years, she was like $3 million, the highest paid female NIL athlete, and one of the top paid male, I mean, with it all. And that number is merely going to grow until the system reins itself in. But others believe that all financial.
Low number, right? I mean, that seems like a low deal to be an NIL analyst. It's almost not a deal.
Yeah. Well, some people do say this. They claim that his financial commitment to Sluka were met, but now Cromartie, his representative and or his other representatives, whether it's parents, friends or whatnot, they believe his market value has increased. So let's take a look at an assessment of Matt Sluka's potential pro football story down the road. And I say this because the way this kid has played, his talent, he may see himself as wanting to set himself up for a draft status. However, one critic said, Sluka's not an NFL prospect. You know, he's a dual threat quarterback at Holy Cross. Hey, I'm sorry, people. Dual threat, that's the end right now. That's going to go away as these big money contracts are given to quarterbacks. It's, for example, the Washington Commanders. I'm like, yeah, he's looking sharp right now.
Yeah.
Wait till let him talk to Randall Cunningham and what happens with these toss, how do you say the word, sinewy or sinewy type athletes, and they take that knee injury and what happens to their careers. They tend to slow down quick. But the level of competition he's played at the FCS level is not very high. He's been seen as very inconsistent with his passing accuracy. He needs to refine his mechanics. He's sitting out the rest of the 2024 season. So I think that's a positive, because he may not have gameplay, but he can work with a trainer. So while he may have potential as an athlete, his current assessments would indicate he needs significant improvement. Could Sluka be looking at these 3 games to go to a more prestigious school where he can showcase himself, gain better NIL dollars, and play at a level where scouts can go, hey, I like what that kid has. What are your thoughts on his current playing level, his potential NIL, more dollars, potential ability to go to a more prestigious school, and anything else? And because for the audience, Bill went to college. Bill has played college ball. So this is a perspective for somebody who's been in the game at that level.
Yeah, so first off, you know, no offense to Holy Cross, but I mean, those statistics are phenomenal, and he's obviously a really great athlete, but they don't translate to the next level, right? So, they just don't. I mean, it's, you know, 3,000 years ago, the Ivy League was Division I. It just isn't that anymore, right? So, you know, he had a great career there, but it doesn't mean that the speed of the game picks up at each level, right? So he's now going to deal with a different level. The speed's going to pick up, and he will not put those statistics up at that level, and then nor will he put them up, you know, at, you know, the next level, you know, at a higher ranked school, so to speak. It's going to be more difficult. Doesn't mean he can't win, but the statistics aren't going to be the same. The other part of it is, you know, the way this whole thing broke down, if I'm an agent or I'm a coach or I'm an athletic director, I'm like, something doesn't sound right. It doesn't mean that he's just going to get a deal because he wants to take some time off, and maybe he's not honoring the deal because there's always another side, right? So if he's not honoring the deal, that does not help him at the next college. It doesn't help him in the draft. It doesn't help him in the combine, because the mental combine, the attitude combine, is just as important, right? So you have to dig into that as well. So, yeah.
Do you think they really care about that anymore? I mean, they drafted some terrible personality players. If there's a scout that goes to the GM, do you check this guy out and they check him out and they like him? Don't you think they'll look past all of that?
Well, no, I don't think he's that good though. Like, I don't think that good to be. Yeah, obviously there are those players that they will work around or try to work with or ignore or whatever the case may be, but he's not that level where they would push everything aside and say, oh, this is, you know, he's what we need. He's going to be the Aaron Rodgers or something for the Green Bay Packers, but that's not going to happen, or I don't believe it will happen with him. But, you know, if you're another program, there are a lot of other quarterbacks that you can go out into the portal and grab, and whatnot. He's not the only one available. So, you know, it's something you have to answer to, though. I mean, if you're selling yourself to another program, you have to have a reason for why you decided to take a red shirt or what actually happened, you know, to create that problem. And it might be an easy answer and he can move on and then, you know, be successful at the next school. But that does have to be talked about, and they will talk about that. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't know what level dollar he'd be looking at. But if I were him, I'd be happy to find another school that I was starting at, especially if I want to go to the next level and not worry about all the other nonsense and get down to playing football. And that's how he'll get to the next level.
I think he'll do that with a proper trainer. If I'm his agent or his advisor, I'm looking at schools that have a history of kids being drafted, but aren't right. The Alabamas or Georgia types, because they already have their players. I'd be looking at San Diego State, a major power like UCLA maybe that struggled. Those type of Boise. I'm not saying these schools have openings. I'm not. I'm just giving examples, people, of the types of schools I'd look at.
Uses athleticism too. I mean, you have to find an offense that, you know, uses that kind of quarterback where they, you can use their legs and have the smarts to, you know, read defenses and make the right throws and keep possession of the football. Not every school has an offense that is looking for that, but most of them do now, it seems. But you're right. I mean, you know, you have to go out and look at that and find the right fit. And there's schools all over the country, and I'm sure he'll find somebody. But the other thing, too, is doesn't just mean you walk in and you get the starting job. So what is he looking to do? Does he want to earn the job? Van Dyke for Wisconsin, who came in from Miami on the portal, you know, assumed he had the starting job. But they actually made him compete with Locke, and it was a really close, close contest. Van Dyke ended up winning it and then hurt himself in the third game of the season against Alabama, and he's out for the year. Brings up another problem. You know, that's happened.
I get that, Bill, but I would think he would not go to a school where he wasn't going to be seen as a starter. I mean, that's going to be with a lot of these players. That's why they transfer. Now, his situation is a little different, but that's why they transfer, because, hey, I want to go start somewhere. You know, they're not going to go to a school and then get beat out. But and the reason I say that is
it changes the schools he can go to. I mean, if he's going to go in and start, right? And obviously, you want to transfer. The whole idea of the portal is you know, you move and you play, right? That's what they're doing.
Well, you know, let's talk about NIL. Yeah. NIL to the audience is created before I don't want to dwell on it too long, but let's tell us about the NIL, how the portal works. I mean, don't give us this is how it's supposed to work, how it was meant to work.
Right.
Tell us how it's really working right now, because it's become a corrupt system, because there is no oversight. What people, I'll say this before I hand it off to you, what people fail to realize is the NCAA, and everybody wanted this, got castrated. But be careful what you wish for, people, is what I always say. And the grass is always greener on the other side. Now the NCAA does not want to put a foot down, because they've gotten castrated not once, not twice, but three times now in court over the last few years. So, Bill, tell us a little bit about this transfer portal and what it means in dollars and cents as well.
Well, I mean, I have my opinions on the transfer portal. Now, they can do it multiple times. I think that needs to be that needs to be minimized. I don't think you can have athletes jumping all around unlimited until their eligibility runs out. So that needs to be addressed too. How many times can you jump, right? I think that needs to be minimized. I also think they need to have a systematic structure in the dollars that schools raise basically for their NIL programs, because you're already seeing that, have and have nots. Coaches are frustrated. Why do you think Nick Saban retired? He saw all this before anybody even really talked about it. It just isn't working because you're basically bribing people, in my opinion, to come to your school for 1 year.
We'll do
X. And your school might be able to do a deal for, let's say, $5 million or whatever it might be, $3 million. But another school only could do $2 million. But you go to the five, so now that's because they're paying you more. And now it's all out of whack, and it becomes more of a professional sport. And then if you're not happy, you can jump and portal out to the next school. One of the things that concerns me too is the locker room. Okay, the camaraderie. Florida State has an issue. They had the big guy come play, get a quarterback, and then they went 0-3. And then I hear that he's not a great locker room guy. So you have a lot of problems. The NIL also separates players out by how much they're making, right? So you have people
It's a tier system is what you're saying, and you're getting an unknown an unknown player in terms of personality. So it's a big risk. And we're going to get into the schools, the fans, and the head coaches, and the players as well, too, for the audience out there, because Bill was on a roll there. But I wanted to make sure the audience knows what NIL actually is.
NIL
means name, image, and likeness. And it has indeed become a significant issue in college athletics, particularly in football. And here's what y'all need to understand, you Title IX fools, you everything is equal. Football brings in the big cash flow. Then comes basketball. Well, football is king. Football, you want your lacrosse team. You want your transgender swimming team. You want your male volleyball spiking and putting women in hospitals. You want all that. I get it. Doesn't happen without football. You know, that's why NIL is so big. So let's break down the perspective. Sorry, Bill. Politics that we got out.
It's true.
So there's head coaches like Dave Clawson of Wake Forest, which is ironic that I found this in my research, because in football talk, Wake Forest is not exactly the powerhouse university. But he kind of fits the system. He's trying to build a program. He gets a top-tier talent that starts to develop. Boom! That guy hits the portal to go to another school. So they've expressed frustration with the current NIL landscape. As you alluded to, players are rented for a season. Some of the pros, the ability. Well, you tell me about some of the pros and cons. And we haven't talked about this. Will coaches follow players eventually down the road? Well, they demand to know how much is in the till for players so they can start building their own salary cap. We got this much. We can offer this player this much, that player that much. What are your thoughts on some of the pros and cons? Well, obviously, some of the pros are going to attract top talent, right?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, where does it end, right? So a big con to me is where does it end? Because obviously in the old days, coaches left schools. That was the biggest thing that would happen, right? So where I was, Texas El Paso, we had a new coaching staff come in. They turned the program around. And then after my senior year, they left. They jumped to Missouri. Okay. Now the whole program's left looking for a new coach, new coaching staff, and some of the players left with the coaches. That used to be the biggest problem a school might have, because it was a coach building a program and then leaving, and then that school had to retool and rebuild and create a new staff, hire a head coach, and keep it going. So keep the momentum going.
So, Bill.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing is there's no team cohesion. You're going to struggle with roster management, with players coming and going.
Yeah.
And in essence, you're creating massive concerns about schools' future with the pay for play. But on the flip side, some schools, hey man, we're going to get a better quarterback, and the and the players like, hey, I'm going to get and another positive, the coach in the university, hey, we're going to get greater exposure with this player coming in and branding for our school. So there are pros and cons. And when I to the audience, when I said, will the coach follow the player? I was talking more off season, not the Sluka incident, meaning a star quarterback, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they just don't take the what I'm trying to say is a coach gets hired. Oh, actually, look at Deion Sanders. He left Jackson State, went to Colorado, took a bunch of players with him through the NIL. So there's a lot of pros and cons about this. Any final word on the head coaches before we move to the fans?
No, I just think that it's frustrating for head coaches, because if you're the haves, you can get anybody you want. And if you're the have not or in between, you can maybe get a few, but you can also lose a bunch of them too. So I think it's frustrating on different levels, but if you're on top, I don't see why you don't just have a great time and find the players every year that you want and explain to players who you promised something to that they're not getting what you thought they might get, because now you have to commit to the guy that just did the NIL deal. You think that a coach won't play that guy over somebody else that was just put on scholarship, but they don't have as much money tied up in the player. So it really makes the whole landscape confusing from the coach's perspective, I think, unless you're on the top of the log.
Kind of like a quasi-amateur pro thing. Okay, so fans are experiencing mixed emotions. Some are embracing the new era, and others, no. And there's a reason for that. I don't even know if they use the term anymore. Big man on campus. That's what these players were. They had their own fan base. I mean, if you want to start quarterback, I mean, these are young men in their physical prime, and biology sets in. They had women draping on their arms, you know, so the excitement over attracting high profile. I'm being real from the fans' perspective.
No, I get it. Yeah, I'm here.
The frat guys, you know, excitement over attracting the high profile players. Increase engagement with these players, because with the money comes, you got to go to this appearance, you got to go to this appearance, you got to do this, you got to do that. We're paying you a lot of money to win on the field, but I want to be seen with you to have pictures taken. That is, in essence, it's boosters on steroids. Some of the cons, the erosion of traditional college sports values, you know, meaning there's your big man on campus. Yeah. Players transfer, they come and go. Again, no loyalty. Yeah. And then obviously the competitive imbalance, Auburn's a rising star. They get a quarterback only to see him go next season. So there's a lot of pros and cons for the fans. And the fans don't really matter, but they are the ones that are filling those stadiums of 100,000 people. You know? So what are your thoughts? And I don't really want to deal with the fans too much. Give me a couple of thoughts on with the fans and pros and cons. And hold on, Bill. Audience, take a look at Bill. As I said, good-looking man, played football. I would wager them to say he was probably a big man on campus. So,
I don't know if there's a big man on campus, but I did love
to. So, as a big man on campus, how many women did you have draped on your arms before Annette and you got together?
I mean, isn't this for another show? I mean, William, this is another topic, isn't it? You're trying to get me in trouble on the camera here.
Bill at Diddy's.
Yeah, that's right. That'll be next week. That'll be next week. I just think from a fan's perspective, though, in a school, you know, there is some pride there. You know, you are who you are, whatever the school might be. I don't think the fan cares too much unless they start not performing. So if you're bringing in these Porter guys and they don't play well, then they're going to get more upset about it. But other than that, as long as everything's going well, they'll buy the T-shirts, jerseys, and, you know, keep with the flow of what's happening on the field.
Right, right. No, I get it.
And I don't know if I'd ever tell you the real answer to your question before that. Will you ever get a real
answer? I don't care, Ravi. Don't be one of P. Diddy's invitees and spill it out on the camera.
I don't even know if you get the real answer off camera either. So anyway.
And that's what somebody should say on camera, people. I'm just making this worse for you, aren't I?
No,
okay. So schools are adapting at different rates. Some are establishing large NIL funds while others struggle to keep up. I don't have it in my notes, but that in and of itself is becoming a problem. The Miami Hurricane program, one of their boosters, just got in trouble for how the NIL funds were set up. But there are pros to this. You can attract better recruits and transfers. Sluka's a great example. He left. He will get more money going somewhere else. Look, his numbers and it just depends on, as Bill said earlier, the openings, the offense, and the team level, the type of where are they, a mid tier school or not? But he will get offers, and again, there's going to be increased visibility, marketing opportunities for these schools locally, statewide, maybe getting ranked. You know, I mean, let's be honest. Let's use UNLV. We always hear of UNLV scratching the surface, whether basketball or football, of being a quality, high ranking team. NIL can help get them over the hump. Some of the pressures. And this is a big pressure, especially if you're not in Alabama, if you're not at USC, you know, to establish and manage the NIL collectives. The challenges with the evolving NIL regulations, because the downfall of many a program has been overzealous boosters. And that's where a lot of this money is going to come from. Smaller schools struggling to compete with larger programs. I think of the SEC, maybe the Big 12, some of the minor schools there who struggled to compete with the big boys versus the San Diego State who's competing in a lesser type division. So there's levels of that. But Bill, what are your thoughts on this? Will there only become a few powerhouses, a handful of teams, or overall, ignoring the bad things of NIL, does this have the potential to create a little bit of parity or to give athletes who are the next Brock Purdy's an opportunity at the college level to showcase themselves? And more importantly, to allow that college kid who isn't going to go pro to earn a few dollars to take it away. What are your thoughts on that from the school's perspective with this?
I think if done the right way, it could actually balance things out and bring people up to the top and make it a more equal playing field from a talent perspective, right? So it has the potential to do that. Sure, someone can make a few dollars and, you know, not make it to the NFL. I would be more concerned about – I walked on and earned a scholarship, okay? So I'm concerned about that opportunity going away for players because that's part of the that's part of the dream for an athlete, but it's really the thing that was always talked about. You know, Nebraska had that famous walk-on program, right? And that's part of college athletics. You know, somebody that you didn't know about and came out, worked hard, and then excelled and, you know, realized the dream and went to the top, earned a scholarship or whatever it might be. That's what athletics, collegiate athletics, are about. It's not just about the guy on top who's the five-star recruit. There's people all the way from the top to bottom filling their roles, practicing, doing all those things. So there has to be some balance there, too, because you can't practice against yourself, right? I mean, you have to have 90 guys out there, some not on scholarship, some earning it, some on scholarship and with bigger NIL packages. But you need each other to win, especially in football, right? So I think there's a chance that they could do. They can – what's that?
No, go ahead. Finish your thought before I ask the question.
I'm just saying, if they do it right, and they create a systematic program where monies are spread out or capped or whatever it might be, so that an example would be, and then I'll stop. If I was looking for Wisconsin, let's say Wisconsin is looking for a number one quarterback, they're not going to do NIL deals with five guys, right? So you might have two guys there and then two will peel off and then they'll go to four different schools. So the idea is that talent might spread out more. I know they're doing that with the portal, but it might spread out right away when an Iowa can pay the same amount as Alabama can pay, right? Or, you know, or something like that. It has a chance.
So, before we move on to, I want your final takes on the players, but what about boosters? How big of an impact will they have with NIL?
Well, I mean, they have the ability to screw the whole thing up and violate rules just like they did when they, you know, paid kids to come to the school back in the old days. It's no different. You're just putting a little rule around it saying it's okay, but they're always going to push the envelope and go past it to get somebody they want to go to the school. So it's the same problem is just going to occur all over again. And that's why really they have to have a systematic program for it.
What I told boosters when I used to have these conversations, why do they allow boosters to do this? Why do boosters do that? I go, because boosters are rich people, usually rich men, and the colleges are play toys. These are guys who were never athletes, but the way they get their kicks supporting the school and being a big man that way. And these are men who are successful in the business world, rarely ever told no, and their moves tend to be more successful than not. So they're not accustomed to being told no to, so they will naturally push the envelope, and that's a problem with them. Okay, so a couple of takes on the players before we close this out. The one thing players do have is control over their personal brand and college career decisions. But there's also the potential for exploitation by unscrupulous agents or businesses, pressure to constantly market themselves, seek deals, disparities that can create potential issues in the locker rooms. You know, you get that quarterback who's being paid a lot of money through his NIL deal, and the team's still 0-8. You know, so there's pros and cons here. I think the fans are the real losers. I think the schools can become losers in all this because I don't see money. It will corrupt everything. So I also see a lot of naive players and parents being taken to the cleaners, and after said and done, they're like that professional player who retires and a couple years later he's broke. I see the same thing happening here in college, just on a different level. What are your final thoughts on the players, some of their pros and cons on this?
Well, I think, you know, there's an opportunity for them to make money before they leave college, and if something happens, they've earned some dollars, right? Because you know, if you get an injury and you go down, but you made some money prior to that, then that makes sense, right? Because you're giving your body to the university on the field. So that makes sense to me. It's a little insurance policy, to go there and play and go to school for free, right?
Right.
Then on the flip side of that, I think it makes it hard for the middle road athlete that might not get the great NIL deal or any at all, but wants to play and is needed. And might not find his position or his place as easily as he might before that because there's no loyalty to the program. So people are going to be jumping around and it's not A, B, C, D. And then you're starting your senior year or something like that, right? If you have the talent to do that. So
right,
I think there's great opportunity for insurance policies to make some money, but it doesn't fit all the players, in their needs.
Right, I agree. So the NIL has fundamentally changed the landscape of college athletics, people. Again, especially football, that's a cash cow. And just for the audience, football is pretty much a cash cow in everything. Sports betting, fantasy, everything. Football is a cash cow. As Bill said, you have new opportunities for athletes to benefit from their talents. It's also introduced to challenges related to the competitive balance, team dynamics, and, to be quite frank, the traditional amateur model of college sports. That's kind of out the window. The combination of NIL with the transfer portal has created a situation akin to NFL free agency, and now it's in college sports. And as Bill alluded, it's going to lead to the long-term sustainability of the current model. That's why it's such a mess. They're trying to blend two different models. So as a result of all this, you're going to see ongoing discussions, potential reforms, including federal legislation to standardize NIL rules across states. Why? Because these fools can't do it themselves. For all you libertarians out there, my big, big buddy, Big John, that's why government gets involved, because these guys don't want to fix it themselves. So before I close this out, I predict the next big ethical issue that nobody's talked about will be grades. By rule, these athletes have to maintain a certain GPA. You will see the reintroduction of cases where we're going to find out that student athlete never went to class because they're busy making this appearance, that appearance, focusing on the game. These are professionally paid amateur athletes. Nobody's talking about that, but that will be the next ethical dilemma. Mark my words. So in conclusion, while NIL has addressed long-standing issues with athletic compensation, and I agree with Bill, That's always been my issue. These kids give their lives on the field. They should be rewarded a little bit more than just a college education in a world where a college education no longer guarantees anything, you know?
Right.
So it's introduced new complexities and it's reshaping college athletics in significant ways. And this story is not over. All righty, Bill, let us move on.
Let me ask you a question. Were you insinuating that athletes don't go to class?
I was not insinuating anything. History and the data prove they don't go to college.
That's the topic.
Exactly. And that's going to be – nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about the grades, you know, these majors, you know. But then again, if a parent, you know, does the Batman and Robin slap mean – that kid will be going to college for 6 years and actually getting an education. He'll spend three, 4 years taking his minimal classes, and with a smart parent, now you're going to be a doctor. You know, so hopefully that's how I envision the perfect world of these student athletes. All right, let's move on. You know, I was going to close it out with the police blotter, and we were going to do the sports betting first. Let's do the police blotter first. The pathetic reality of men who choose violence against women, allegedly.
Allegedly.
So let me grab my notes here. Well, I say allegedly because, man, some of these women, I'm not going to lie. Where's my notes here? They are, they're not good people. They're gold diggers. And they will lie to sit there and do a man wrong just because they had the power. I am not a fan of them. I grew up with three sisters, a mom and an aunt while my dad was in Vietnam. So I am well aware of what a strong woman is, but there's also gold diggers out there. And, but we don't know. And in today's police blotter, we are going to talk about, two men that have been in the news recently. Von Miller, who is an established name in the NFL, who many see going into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And we're going to talk about a young rookie, Mike Hogg Jr. for the Cleveland Browns. So let's start off with Von Miller. Violation of the NFL's personnel conduct policy. He's been suspended for 4 games. He was arrested in November 2023 for alleged domestic violence. No charges were filed. And this is where it becomes a gray area for me. In November 2023, Von Miller was arrested in suburban Dallas on allegations of assaulting his pregnant girlfriend. Miller was released a $5,000 bond. He turned himself in. In 2024, prosecutors in Dallas County decided not to charge him. The district attorney's office stated after a thorough review, they determined there was not insufficient evidence to prosecute the case. Now, there's minimal impact on the field because Von Miller is just a shell of himself. I mean, he's what, 34, 35 now? He's a shell. I mean, to be honest, the reason he's still on the team is because of this big fat contract. He signed in 2022 for $51 million guaranteed. 2022 season ended with an ACL tear. 2023, no sacks. He shows some improvement. 2024, 3 sacks in his first 3 games. But they overpaid for him, thinking they had a Super Bowl window of the year they signed him. So the key point here I want to make to you is reading all this. First of all, talk to me, Bill. You were in the college scene. I saw it in the military with sailors. I know good and well you saw it in college with the arrogance of some of your co-players. You know, none of us like to admit this, but that's a simple truth of male testosterone. There's always those, excuse my French here, assholes out there who think their shit don't stink. So my question to you, we both see this, and yet we probably don't have an answer, but why do they continually do this? Deshaun Watson, Ray Watt, Rice, Kareem Hunt, O.J. Simpson. You know, Bill, why?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have 5 girls, so I'm not as easily swayed to your gold digger accusation. But, you know, as athletes, and professional athletes especially, you need to know that your conduct is – going to be scrutinized. You can't even raise a finger at, you know, to your girlfriend, your wife, a woman, or whoever it might be. You just have to know you can't do that. I mean, you have to have the discipline on the field. And then you might as well have, you have to have it off the field too, because you're just not any guy. You're an athlete. You're a public figure. So, you know, you have to know that and check yourself before you get into a situation, you know, arguing or whatever the hell it is, that got you into trouble, whether you're choking your girl, or who's pregnant, you know, or throwing her around, or you have the other guy who's using a, you know, firearm. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. You know, that with the activity, and then you got Watson who's now has new allegations in, you know, for Cleveland. But you know, you just have to, you have to behave better.
He just
resolved
them. He just resolved them and paid her a settlement. Oh,
yeah, the more well, when's the next one coming out? I mean, you know, come on. I mean, if there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, the other problem is that when this happens to these guys, they're old enough where they've probably already been acting like this, you know, prior to getting on, you know, to getting on an NFL team. Cause you know, what have they done in college? And the problem is, it's a violent sport, right? It's a violent sport and you're young, you know, you're 17, 18, 19, 20 in college. You're young when you go into the NFL. So, you know, there's a little on the NFL too here where they need to do a better job, you know, teaching the players, mentoring them, you know, as they become pros, how to be pros, how to handle their money, but also how to behave towards women. You know, that should be a big part of their program. And if someone needs extra help, then go get it, because, you know, it's a ridiculous situation. It shouldn't be happening. And quite frankly, whether the call comes in and then they change the story, which also happens, the call came in for a reason. So if there's no charges pressed, well, the call came in. So, you know, behave yourself and act like a man.
Right.
You
know? So, Bill, first of all, let me rephrase that. I am a show me the evidence. We've got, because anybody can be accused. Let me give you an example. Yes. You know the Chiefs punter, Matt Araiza, was accused. Turned out everything was completely false. He had sex with a woman. It was consensual. She lied to him about her age. He was an innocent victim for a shakedown. So that said, it's my issue is let's not jump to conclusions. The downside in domestic abuse, and my friend who's a cop has told me over and over, he goes, there's one family, he goes, we were like on our 30th call. I've been on this beat for like 4 or 5 years. He goes, when we got the call, we would just go get a cup of coffee, go wait, pause, because we let them get all their anger. He goes, because when we showed up there, all of us said, no, 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 I love my man, don't arrest him. And the woman would attack them, you know? Right. And that's where it comes into what you're saying, changing the story. So that's a tough issue. And I know this part, but I'll defend the NFL here a little bit. They have a rookie symposium. They bring all kinds of speakers in. They have mentorship programs. The problem, as I see it, is I was told by retired players, agents, when these stars are discovered at a very young age, whether it's peewee, junior high, high school, or college, that they have a special skill, they're never told no. Their transgressions are always covered up. Yep. So then they get to the NFL where it's more high profile, or baseball, or any other sport. They're not told no. They don't know how. So a lot of these, you're right, are probably true. And it's a tough situation. My take is the Me Too movement became a gold digger political movement. I'm going to take out people I don't like. And so it just clouded it up. What I would tell you, Bill, is please raise your daughters to know how to leave or not enter a relationship with these types of people. That's the other thing I don't understand. I know you like the bad boy girls, but when that bad boy starts beating on you, it's time to leave. And a lot of you don't, you know? So it's a twofold problem where I think the NFL is – I used to not defend the NFL, but they've been trying, which brings me to this question.
I'll say something, though, about that. You know, how hard are they really trying? I mean, you know, they have every month for everything. Like, why does the NFL care more about transgender month than they do about, you know, women in general? Oh, wait a minute. We don't know what a man and who's what, where, and then, and how pronouns. I mean, are they really doing a good job?
Okay, Bill, hold on. Let me ask you this then. These are grown men. On average, if they graduate college 24 years old, 22 to 24, they are legally grown men. Yep. Okay. Because a lot of people say what you do, but they don't respond with what's with this question. And let me get an answer for you. What should the NFL do?
Do they have a Violence Against Women Month?
No, stop.
Stop.
Because that's nothing. These months of this, months of that. I'm asking seriously. What can they realistically do?
Well, that's one thing. I'm answering the question. One is they put a month towards it because they wear ridiculous merchandise for these other months. You know, the rainbow. If you're going to do a rainbow color and all these other things, then start with a month for violence against women.
You're a successful businessman. I'm a marketer. There's no way that NFL or any sport or any business is going to do a anti-domestic violence. And here's why. There are legal ramifications. There are potential PR nightmares. Because my issue is not the domestic violence. My issue is concussion. Why don't they support many of these concussion groups? They don't want it to reflect back. So from a business perspective, that's an honest. Yeah. You're telling them, do what's right, NFL. It's going to cost you billions, but do what's right. They're going to know. So that's a non-starter. I'm asking you, what can they realistically do? And I'm not talking about to appease the public because that domestic violence month is more for the public. What can they actually do? Focus on the player. Get the public out of it. But focus on that player. And the reason I say that is I think the way they saw this is more internally. They're a family, supposedly, and families are tough on one another with ugly truths. So what can they do from that perspective? Because everything else is just hype. It's just wordplay. It's just marketing. It's just PR.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously you have to police it and speed up the process because if somebody is doing this, you're gone. I'm sorry. You don't 4 and 5 games if you've actually really done it. If you want to change it, then that consequences have to outweigh it, right? So if that happens and maybe you have a 3-strike policy, 2-strike, whatever it might be, they need to be gone. They can't play. They're got banned for life, okay? If Pete Rose can be banned for betting, then you can be banned for beating up women. I'm sorry.
So let's get back to that. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm playing devil's advocate here. Yeah. Okay. In January 2024, prosecutors in Dallas County decided not to charge Miller. So he was never charged for anything.
Right.
You know, there's no evidence. It's a he said. I'm not saying it didn't happen. You know, and let's do Michael Hall Jr. real quick. Suspended 5 games. Arrested August 13th in Streetsboro, Ohio on a misdemeanor. How can domestic violence be misdemeanor? On a misdemeanor domestic violence charge. Hall was accused of grabbing his girlfriend by the throat and pushing her against a wall during an argument. Look, a man that big grabbing a woman. I don't care how big the woman is. She's going to be petite. Compared to Michael Hall Jr., he's a big man. So this incident led to his placement on the commissioner's exempt list and suspension. However, he pleaded no contest to reduce charge of disorderly conduct.
Right.
Conduct by $250 received a suspended jail sentence. So I hear what you're saying, but you're going to have to deal with the NFLPA who's going to go, no. There were no charges. My client is innocent. So how do they deal with that?
Well, I mean, first of all, unions for whoever the union is, they're going to represent the other side. That player association is not going to like a suggestion I just made where if they touch a woman, then they're out and they're banned from the league. It's just not going to happen. But all I'm saying is be true to your word. I mean, if the NFL is going to put bullshit months up, then do something that is meaningful where you're actually, headlining something that you might want to work harder on or start a program around and then talk about internally how you're going to teach the players better behavior or executives better behavior, whatever it might be, right? But the physical violence from a football player or athlete on a woman at any time, anywhere, any place in time is a zero. What you're doing though is when you do it, you're giving the woman the chance to play the other side of the game and, you know, press charges or not press charges. But just by doing it and you get the authorities involved, it starts the whole cycle, right? So you have to, as a person, as a human being, men don't hit women. Okay, that's the way it works. Now, I know in this day and age, people want to say there is no such thing as a man and a woman, but men are physically stronger most of the time than women, okay? And you don't see women changing to men and competing with men. The men change to women, well, they're really not women, but they think they are, so they can compete with the women because they have an advantage. So don't, you know, come on. Don't touch women, and men aren't women, and men shouldn't be competing with women in women's sports. Title IX was supposed to defend the women, not work around them so men can be women and play against them. But the whole thing is, men in general, as I'm going over the, because this is one of my pet peeves, should be touching women, no matter what, ever.
I don't think any person with a sound mind would disagree. I think part of the problem, too, is this new generation of no accountability and being stupid. Take Kareem Hunt. That woman charged him. The way he decked her and knocked her out. Right? I'm like, dude, that's a little too far. But it's a catch-22. He can say, I was legally, physically attacked and I was defending myself. Where you and I look at him, I agree. But you didn't have to take her out with the right hook. You know, you could have held her back, grabbed her, done something.
Who's he playing for right now? He's on the Chiefs, right?
That's right.
Yeah, but
I agree with you. But it was seen as more self-defense than anything. Yeah.
Well, but that's the legality of it is, yeah, he can claim self-defense, but he did it, okay? And it's on the fans, too, by the way, to some degree, because the fans are watching, so if they want something to change, you can't watch it, right?
Here's how that works.
Yeah.
You're a mediocre player or a bad player and you do this. Damn it. Yeah, they did a good job. They cut his ass. Yeah, yeah. Patrick Mahomes says it. Oh, we got to wait. We got to wait for everything. Brittany, she deserved that beat. And Patrick Mahomes has done nothing. I just tossed the name out there, audience.
That's how it works. The scale isn't equal. It's a random system. And, this is why the commissioner should never have been involved in discipline, because there's a conflict of interest. I'm sorry. The NFL doesn't like
that. Oh, yes. Hold on. Let's not look at just the beating on women. Look at a little wee Willie up there in New England, the owner up there. What's the owner's name? Kraft. Little wee Willie Kraft is what I call it now. You know, getting that little tug job there. You know, I mean, it had nothing to do with beating a woman.
No.
But he got no punishment. So what kind of example? I mean, it starts at the top, doesn't it? If you're not willing to discipline your owner for transgressions caught on public, then what right do you have to discipline the player? I'm not defending the players again. I'm just saying the whole system is messed up. I think all they can do is I don't know what they can do, to be quite honest, except they have to – maybe they have weekly meetings. You don't beat a woman. You don't do this. Tales of this, tales of that. Mentorship programs. I don't know. Real quick to the audience, Bill did not mean bullshit monthly programs. The breast awareness monthly.
How do you know? I didn't mean – yeah. Shit. The last thing I'll say is maybe when they work the contracts out, they're going to actually have to be more specific about what you can do in play and what you do that knocks you out of the league. Cause then when the union agrees to it, then you'll see certain behaviors not accepted and those people aren't playing anymore.
Exactly. No, I agree. Look, everybody, this is a very touchy situation. There are times when one side is right, times when the other side is right, meaning the man didn't do it, the woman just saying it. There's times when the man has hit the woman, shouldn't have hit it. It's a struggle. But when you have been told, when you have never been told no after your talent has been discovered, which was relayed to me by both retired players and agents, this problem will continue.
Yeah,
and it's going to get worse without accountability in this league. And Bill, any final words on this topic? And you're very passionate about it. That you would tell these young players if you were in the position of having them in a room.
Well, I mean, you have to be above it. I don't care what the situation is. Don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to have an issue or could have an issue. I would also tell my girls not to go in a room with one of them one night where you could have an issue, okay? Make them call you 3 days later or something like that, right? I mean, if there's people on both sides of the equation, but I hold the man responsible for behavior with the woman more than anything else. So don't put yourself in that situation is what I would talk about, and how to do it and how not to do it, etc. That's my final say on that.
And there you have it, folks. Look, I know we're going to talk about sports bettors and angry fans. We'll save that till next week. But it's been a great show, Bill. I mean, we covered a lot. We got the NIL, which is a mess. We got men beating on women, which is a mess. And we said goodbye to Mr. Dikembe Mutombo. And Bill is going to treat you guys. You're going to see it. We're going to create a few clips here. Bill is a big baseball fan. And look for some content to come up on Pete Rose. Bill's going to give his take on the New York Jets and Robert Saleh and the firing. So be on the lookout for not only points on the board with this podcast and some of our other podcasts, but also for some upcoming clips. So do not forget, you can catch this podcast, Points on the Board, as well as our other podcasts, such as Fired Up with co-host with Bill's lovely wife, Miss Annette, and other individuals, as well as our Libertarian podcast and our other basketball and pure play football podcast. No politics, just all NBA and all NFL talk. You can find those podcasts and more at grumblingsmedia.com. You can find them at our social media platforms, which are Rumble, YouTube, Spotify, Pandora, and Apple under the profile handle Grumblings Media. I am William Del Pilar for Big Bill, and this is Points on the Board. And until next time, I bid you, or rather, we bid you adieu.